There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass,
or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. Come in. I was just reminiscing over some of my old childhood games. Did you ever play chess? The kind where you drop a chess on someone, huh? Yes, they usually die laughing. You know, they just don't make games like that anymore. Boy, those were the days. It was before your time, though. In fact, humans were so new, the only thing we could play with them was pin the tail on the monkey, huh? But even as time wore on, there was always something different about our games. Take cowboys and Indians, for instance. When we played, we used real guns and arrows, huh? In fact, we were the ones who coined the term pale face, except we used it on someone who hit the bullseye and called them impale face, huh? And when we'd play soldier, our firefights couldn't be matched. Unless, of course, your matches lit flamethrowers. That's what they said. Now, word games were always my favorite. All I needed was a pen, paper, and rope. The game was called Hangman, huh? Yes, the pen and paper was the word part of the game. See if you could trick them into a suicide note, huh? Actually, though, I tried to be fair and give everyone a chance, so half the time I'd play Hang Woman, huh? But I stopped as I grew older because I matured and began to appreciate their beauty. The beauty of their necks, that is. Which brings us to tonight's super scary features, which involve folks who stuck their necks out only to have them shortened. Yes, we'll hear Inner Sanctum, as well as Escape's Present Tense, but only after we've heard the master of horror, Ronald Reagan, in Suspense, Circumstantial Terror So Scary!
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Ronald Reagan in tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents the story of a man who wanted to apologize for threatening a stranger. And when he got there, the stranger was dead and the police were waiting. It's called Circumstantial Terror. Our star, Mr. Ronald Reagan. And now, Autolite presents Circumstantial Terror, starring Mr. Ronald Reagan, hoping once again to keep you in suspense.
I wasn't the only one who was mad at him. All the other guys felt just about like I did. About Curly Weber, that is. You see, if he hadn't let the pressure go too high, we'd have all been in good shape right now. As it was, the boiler blew up and wrecked the cleaning plant where I worked. The owner collected the insurance money and got out of the business, which left us with no jobs. After a few months of looking around for a job, I was in a pretty bad way. Then I connected. Only trouble was, it wouldn't start for 3 weeks. By now, I was broke, irritable, and mad at the world. So I wasn't what you'd call a pleasant type fellow when I walked into this liquor store for a package of smokes about 11 o'clock one night.
So, what else could I do, Eddie? There I was with egg on my face and that phony salesman telling me I was going to have to take what he gives me or get nothing at all.
What do you have to buy from him for?
His outfit has the distributor tied up. 25% of what I make from his scotch.
I make a pack of cigarettes.
Hold your horses, mister. I got another customer. So, I check around town to see if maybe I can get the scotch somewhere else.
How'd you make out?
Go ahead. Take a guess.
Come on, mister. Get off the dime. Just give
me a... What's the matter with you? Ain't you got no manners?
Just give me a pack of cigarettes and stop shooting off your mouth.
Me shooting off my mouth? Look, Buster, I got a pretty good trade right now, so why don't you take your two-bit sale somewhere else? I don't even like the way you look.
Listen, smart guy. I've taken a lot of lip from guys like you in the last few months. One more crack out of you and I'll smear you all over the joint. Do you hear?
All right, mister. All right. Take it easy. Sam don't mean no harm. That's just the way he talks.
And let him talk to somebody else like that.
Hey, why don't you give me cigarettes, Sam? We can talk some more after he leaves.
Okay. What kind do you want, mister?
I don't want any kind. I just want you to remember something. Next time you see me, you'd better cross over to the other side of the street. It'll be healthier for you. Remember that. I went back to my room and poured myself a drink. No doubt about it, I'd acted like a fool. But 4 months of being unemployed didn't exactly develop an even temper. It was a half hour before I realized I still hadn't got any cigarettes, and another 15 minutes before I could talk myself into going back to the liquor store to apologize for losing my temper. The street was dark, and the only light on the whole block came from the glowing window of the liquor store. I still wasn't sure what I was going to say to Sam when I got there, and I knew I'd fix everything up all right. I'd gotten to within about 100 feet of the store when I noticed a black, or what seemed to be black, coupe parked in front of the store. Just about the time I noticed it, I heard a shot. It seemed to come from the direction of the store. I stopped for a second. Then a guy rushed out of the store right in front of me, jumped into the car, and before I could do anything, it roared down the darkened street out of sight. I ran to the store and looked in. Nobody around. And I looked behind the counter. The guy I'd argued with, Sam, was on the deck. I could tell right away that it was a waste of time to check his pulse, but I did it anyway. He was dead, all right. Then I started for the door to call the cops.
Hey, what's going on?
What'd I tell you, Irv?
I saw who did it. He ran out the door as I was coming up the street. Come on.
Grab him, Irv. He did it. That's the guy I was telling you about.
Come on, buddy.
Let go. I tell you, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I saw the guy that did. Let go.
Hold on to him, Irv. That's the guy Sam had to throw out of the store. He was casing the joint. That's what he was doing.
Let go of him.
Yeah, hold him good, Irv. I'm going for the cops.
Don't worry. He ain't going nowhere.
As I was getting up to go after the police, these two guys rush in and hold me. I didn't do it, I tell you.
He's lying, officer. We'll find out if he's lying when the guys from Homicide get here.
I don't even own a gun.
That gun laying by Sam's body is Sam's gun. Looks to me like this guy shot him with his own gun.
If you don't shut your mouth.
Easy, does it.
What happens when the guys from Homicide get here?
You want my honest opinion, mister?
Yeah, sure.
I didn't put the cuffs on you for laughs. I think you've had it, buddy. It's only an opinion, but from what I can see here, what I've gotten from these witnesses, you're nailed, buddy. Nailed good.
And I was. By the time it was presented to the grand jury, the state had a real good case prepared against me. The liquor store owner's gun only had his prints on it, which made it look as if I'd tried a phony hold-up and jumped him when he drew it. And there was money scattered all over the store, which made it look as if I'd been surprised before I had a chance to get away. That guy Eddie, who'd been in the store when I had my argument, wouldn't let me up. He pounded nails in my coffin every time he opened his mouth. I'd had a job when all this happened that had trouble giving me a motive. And being broke and unemployed made it look that much worse. As a result, I wasn't surprised when the grand jury came through with an indictment for first-degree murder. As far as I was concerned, it was all over but the hanging.
Frank Thompson?
Right now, I wish I weren't, but I am. Who are you?
I'm Ernest Gibbons. I've been assigned as public defender in your case.
You're wasting your time.
Why? Are you guilty?
No, I'm not.
Well, then I'm not wasting my time. Mind if I sit down?
Go ahead.
Well, I think I got most of the facts straight in my mind. Now, I want you to tell me in your own words what happened.
Did you read the transcript of the inquest?
Yes, I did.
That's all there is to it.
Uh-huh. Well, look, Frank, I'm here to help you if I can. Now, don't make it tough for me. I think we can beat this if you help me.
How?
Well, first, let's forget that story about running in after the storekeeper was shot. Now, nobody believes that.
Would you believe it if I tell it to you again?
Should I?
Yes, because it's the truth.
Well, can you describe the man you saw running out?
More or less.
Well, what do you mean by more or less?
Well, I got a pretty good look at his face. He had a mustache. Well, I couldn't tell you how tall he was or how much he weighed. It seemed to me to be just medium all around.
Well, you said at the inquest that he got in a car and he drove up. Now, can you describe the car?
The black coupe.
And what year?
Don't know.
Well, how about the make?
I couldn't tell. It was too dark.
Mm-hmm. But the license number, all or any part of the license number?
None of it. All his lights were out.
Uh-huh. In other words, if you wanted to lie, this would be a pretty good way of blaming someone the police couldn't possibly track down, wouldn't it?
I guess so. But I'm not lying.
All right, now let's see. The state has set the trial for a week from today.
In a hurry, aren't they?
I guess they figure that they've got you sewed up. The papers have public opinion running pretty high against you. You know, the man left a wife and three little kids.
Well, that's tough. Real tough. A couple of days later that Ernie came to me and said they were selecting the jurors who'd hear the case. This was a part of the law I didn't know a thing about, so when he said I had a right to sit in on the selection, I went along, only to get out of the cell for a few hours.
Well, to put it simply, it's more of an interview than anything else. It also gives us the chance to get jurors we think might be more easily swayed to our way of thinking.
I'm to the point where I don't care much one way or another. I just wanted to get out of the cell for a little while. Maybe I'd be better off if I just plead guilty and get it over with.
Oh, now you're talking foolish, boy. There's a lot that can happen in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. It's all going to happen to me.
Some of it might be good, you know.
Don't hold your breath.
Well, over here, Frank. Sit down, Mike.
Okay.
I'm going to try to get as many women as I can on the jury. You're a pretty good-looking boy. It helps sometimes.
What about the prosecution? Don't they have anything to say about it?
Well, I doubt if they challenge more than once or twice. Now, they think they have such a strong case, it doesn't matter much to them who's on the jury.
They're right, too, aren't they?
Now, that remains to be seen. Well, here they come.
Yeah. Right now, I'd trade places with any given one of them.
I don't think you'd get any takers. Not as many women as I'd like to have seen.
Ernie.
What's up, boss?
The guy with the gray suit.
Where?
Over there, next to the dame with the fur coat.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about him?
Don't challenge him.
What?
Don't challenge him. That's the guy.
What guy?
That's the guy that killed the shopkeeper. That's the guy I saw running out of the store that night. Get him on the jury. Don't let him get away. I don't want to die for what he did.
Is bringing you Mr. Ronald Reagan in Circumstantial Terror, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Hey, Charlie, what Nash model is this?
Oh, this is the new Nash Statesman, Harlow. You know, this year, Nash offers the widest range of models and prices in history. And you can get such optional features as power steering, power brakes, and even power lift windows. And of course, Harlow, Nash has auto light equipment, too.
And Autolite is proud of its long association with Nash and Nash dealers everywhere. That's why we're privileged to salute Nash as a distinguished member of our Autolite family.
Distinguished is the word for the new Nash, Harlow, and advanced, too. The 1954 Nash gives you greater safety with exclusive unitized Nash air flight construction, greater economy on regular gasoline, greater comfort with a new exclusive Nash all-weather eye air conditioning system that heats, ventilates, and cools at your command. And Harlow, next week, Nash introduces a completely new kind of car. Watch for it.
Okay, Charlie, and thanks for the ride.
Always a pleasure, Harlow, especially in a new Nash.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Ronald Reagan in Elliot Lewis's production of Circumstantial Terror, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It was tough sitting through the selection of the jury, especially when I knew that the prosecution could, for no apparent reason, disqualify the man I'd pointed out to Ernie. If he was the man I'd seen run out of the liquor store the night of the shooting, then he had to be where we could keep tabs on him. Ernie sacrificed a couple of his limited number of peremptory challenges just to make sure the guy came up for selection. When he did, there was no objection on either side, and we had him. Later that afternoon, when Ernie came to my cell, we tried to figure out what we were going to do with him.
Well, now that we've got him, what are we going to do with him?
Well, that's your job to figure out, Ernie. You're the lawyer.
We're no better off now than we were at the beginning. We haven't got a shred of evidence to substantiate your claim.
I saw him. Isn't that enough?
Well, you're on trial, not him.
Well, supposing I get up in court and say he's the man, what would happen?
He'd probably declare it a mistrial and discharge the jury. Then go to work on another trial, but you'd stay in jail.
Wouldn't they question him?
Maybe. It was pretty obvious he'd say you were off your rocker. Remember, Frank, you're the one who's accused. Defending yourself by accusing him just on your say-so is pretty flimsy. Who'd believe it? Would you?
Well, couldn't you do it? Couldn't you tell someone?
Proof, Frank. Proof. What can I possibly do but quote you?
What am I going to do?
Just what we're doing. Go through with this trial. Then I'll appeal, no matter what the verdict is, and see if we can rope our friend into making a mistake.
But he'll duck as soon as the trial's over, won't he?
Probably, but at least he'll be around while the trial is on. Now, if you cause a mistrial, he'll be gone a lot faster.
It isn't fair. I know he's the man.
This is a court of law. The burden of proof is on the accuser.
What real proof have they got against me?
They don't have to catch a man in the act of murder to convict him of it. Circumstantial evidence can be strong enough, and in your case, it seems to be.
It's driving me nuts to think that this guy is going to help send me away for a murder he committed.
Yeah, they haven't sentenced you yet, boy. Let's see what happens.
And if it does happen?
Maybe we'll have something I can use to ask for a new trial, if we get into trouble.
Where's the trial going to be?
Well, Judge Thurston will preside, I think. Let me see, that'll put it in the City Hall Annex.
Where's that?
In the Annex, that's a small building on the north side of the City Hall. That's next to the parking lot. Why?
Just asking, that's all.
Frank?
Yeah?
Don't try any grandstand plays. Any tangle with the jury might result in a mistrial, and I don't think that's a good idea.
Okay. I won't mess with them.
That's good. Well, yeah, I gotta get going.
Going home?
I guess so.
Tell me something, Ernie.
Sure. Well, what do you want to know?
What are my chances, Ernie? And don't kid me.
I wouldn't kid you, Frank. I don't know right now, but I'd sure be lying if I said they were good.
Thanks. That's what I wanted to know. That's what I liked about Ernie. When you asked for the truth, he gave it to you. After he left, I lay back in my cot and thought about the whole mess. Everything had happened so fast, I really hadn't had time to take stock of my position. Now I did. And what I came up with made me want to beat my brains out against the steel bars out of sheer frustration. It wasn't anybody's fault. You discounted the guy that actually did the killing. I didn't have any beef with the law or the people who were carrying out the law. It was just that they didn't know they were going to convict an innocent man. For hours, I guess I lay there thinking about ways to clear myself. Most of the ways were more daydreaming than anything else. I finally came up with the conclusion that anything I did was going to have to really go from the time I started it. There wouldn't be time for talk or reason. In the morning, I got dressed and ready for the first day of the trial. When I got to the courtroom, I was seated beside Ernie. Then came the time when papers were being shuffled and everyone was getting set for the opening arguments.
Now, then you take it easy, Frank. We're going to fight real hard.
You know what a backfire is?
You mean like when a car...
No, I mean like when you're caught in a bad brush fire without any water.
Well, I'm not with you, kid. What are you going for?
You light another fire downwind, let it give you a big burn spot to stand in while the main fire goes past.
All right, you explain it to me later, Frank. The judge will be here in a minute or two, and I want to get my papers straightened here. He doesn't like to see an unprepared attorney.
Listen to me, Ernie. I'm in the path of a real big fire right now.
I know you are, boy. I know, but what...
So I got to try a backfire. A guy can get killed in a backfire, but at least you got to take a chance.
Well, what are you trying to tell me? Now, say it fast.
You'll hear from me. Stick with me, Ernie. I'm a pretty good guy, but I'm in real bad trouble. And I'm the only guy that can get me out of it.
Well, what are you going to do?
This. Look out! Get out of my way! The only thing I could do. I couldn't sit by while 12 people tried to make up their minds whether I must die for a murder I didn't commit. As I went out the window, I folded my arms in front of my face to keep from being cut to ribbons with a broken glass. I lit feet first in the parking lot and started running. I didn't know where I was going. All I knew was I had to get away fast. By the time everyone got organized, I'd pretty well lost myself in the alleys of the city. I got to a place where they were putting up an office building and ducked into the sub-basement, crawled into a corner and stayed there. Somewhere around midnight, I slid out and started for the only guy in town I knew wouldn't turn me in as soon as he saw me, Ernie Gibbons. When I got there, his place had a light on in the kitchen, so I went around the back. Hi, Ernie. What? Let me in.
Well, come on, Harry. What are you doing here? If they find out about this, I'll be disbarred.
I won't stay long.
Wait till I turn the light off. Now, sit right there, Frank. And don't move around too much.
Thanks.
Okay. Tell me why you did it.
I told you this morning in court. This is my backfire. I couldn't just stand around while they made up their minds whether to kill me or let me rot in jail. I didn't do it. I'm going to get the guy that did.
Oh, then they'll really have you.
And they'll have me for something I did, not something I didn't.
Well, why'd you come here?
I need an address.
An address? You mean the guy with the mustache?
Yeah. Got anything on him?
He isn't around, Frank.
How do you know?
By the time I got through with the mess you left behind, it was pretty late in the day.
What are you talking about?
Just this. We knew he'd duck out as soon as the trial was over. But during the trial, we might have been able to work something. That's why I warned you about causing a mistrial. Well, this afternoon I went over to the address he'd given. And he moved out a few hours after your break.
Any forwarding address?
Oh, don't be so naive. The man is a murderer. I don't think he knows you saw him running out of the store, but he isn't taking any chances. He's lost, Frank. And you're in a bigger jam than before.
What do I do now?
Oh, yes, you tell me.
I won't give myself
up. Well, that's up to you. You're on your own now.
What's your position in this?
Well, I should turn you in.
But you won't.
Oh, you're a cinch. They have the book thrown at you when they get you.
I gotta think.
Yeah, sure.
Ernie, do something for me, will you?
I might. What is it?
I'm a pretty hungry man. Could you rustle me up some food?
Oh, sure, Frank. I'll fix you some food.
It's about that witness that claims he saw me casing the place, that Eddie character?
Yeah, well, what about him?
He's the state's number one witness, isn't he?
Well, I guess so.
What's he got against me? Why is he trying so hard to get me?
Well, I think that for the first time in his life, he's somebody and he's going all out to prove it.
I'm going to see him.
No, no, you're not. You're in enough trouble. Lay off of him.
Give me his address, Ernie.
Well, you're out of your mind.
Give me his address. I want to talk to him.
Oh, but Frank...
I know you've got it. You've got the addresses of all the witnesses. Get it.
Okay. It's here in my briefcase. Hey.
What?
Well, that's funny. I never noticed this before.
Noticed what? What are you mumbling about?
The witness against you lives right over the liquor store where the guy was shot.
Ernie.
Yeah?
Just a thought. But he's the fellow that accused me of casing the shop. Suppose it was the other way around. Suppose he was casing it for our friend with the mustache.
Well, you'd have to prove a connection between the two men. But... So how are you going to do that?
I don't know. I'll figure that out when I get there.
Oh, I can't let you do that, Frank.
Don't try to stop me.
Well, you could get picked up on the way there.
I'll be there in a
but
few minutes.
3 or 4 miles from here.
You're lending me your car.
I am.
Yeah. Give me the keys.
Okay. Here.
So long, Ernie.
I wish I could stop you. Because...
Don't try it. I wouldn't want to hurt you.
Oh, well, thank you. So long.
Eddie Wilson, come on, open up.
I don't know any...
But you know me, Eddie.
Thompson!
That's right, Frank Thompson, fall guy.
What do you want from me?
I
want
to know why you're so anxious to see me burn.
You tried to hold Sam up and killed him, that's why.
You know better than that.
I do? What other reason would I have?
Hold it down to a roar, Eddie. I gotta get some sleep.
Come on in, mister. You with the mustache.
Thompson?
Yeah, that's what Eddie said when he saw me. All right, Eddie, what's this guy doing here?
He's my brother, but it don't mean...
Cozy, huh? One guy in a witness box and one guy in a jury. You really got it made.
Yeah. What are you going to do about it?
Make you tell the truth.
What are you talking about?
Why'd you kill him? Need the money?
Get out of here.
After you write me a confession.
So I can burn instead of you?
That's right.
You're wasting your time.
Am I?
Get the cops, Eddie, now!
Get up, you. Am I wasting my time? Am I?
I don't write nothing.
You won't.
Okay. Okay, now.
Start writing.
Here come the cops. You're dead.
No, mister, you are. If the cops get here before you finish writing, I'll kill you. If I'm going to fry for something you did, I'm going to be sure you go with me. Now make up your mind. You want to die right now or take a chance with a jury?
Okay. Give me a pen.
You understand why I sent for the cops, Frank. I didn't want you getting any more trouble.
Oh, sure, that's all right.
Well, how's it feel?
Mighty good. It's a pretty town when you don't have to look at it from behind steel bars.
Yeah. What are you going to do now?
Well, it looks like I'll be able to make that job I told you about. Only a few more days to wait.
Where are you be staying?
I don't know.
You got any money?
No.
You got any money?
No.
Then it's settled. You'll stay with us until you get on your feet.
Now, Ernie.
You heard me.
Okay. Lend me a quarter.
Sure. What for?
I ought to buy a pack of cigarettes from a machine.
Presented by Autolite, tonight's star, Mr. Ronald Reagan.
Congratulations on an excellent performance, Ronald.
Well, thanks, Harlow. Say, what about this $100,000 Autolite family charity drawing? Am I eligible?
Well, if you're over 18, you are.
I'm eligible.
Well, all you do is visit any Autolite family car dealer showroom, print your name and address on a registration form, and have the dealer sign it. And if you're one of the 25 people selected, you can name your favorite church, hospital, or any other local or national recognized charity to share in $100,000.
And all I do is fill out a form? You mean there are no puzzles to solve or anything like that?
That's right, Ronald. Nothing to solve, buy, or try.
And where do I register?
At any of the following showrooms: DeSoto, Hudson, Plymouth, Studebaker, Dodge, Willis, Nash, Packard, Kaiser, or Chrysler.
Sounds like a wonderful opportunity, Harlow.
Thank you, Ronald Reagan. Friends, you can help your favorite recognized charity share in $100,000 just by signing your name and address. So why not sign up tomorrow?
Fence is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Lud Bluskin. Circumstantial Terror was written for Suspense by Ross Murray. In tonight's story, Howard McNear was heard as Ernie. Featured in the cast were Vic Perrin, Clayton Post, Charles Calvert, Hal Gerard, and Kurt Martell.
Ronald Reagan is currently starred with Steve Forrest and Dewey Martin in the MGM production Prisoner of War. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Kids, wasn't that the scariest, huh? Let me tell you, that Reagan was pretty smart in not waiting around for the verdict. Otherwise, he may have replaced the hung jury, huh? Speaking metaphorically, of course, he could have become the key in their deadlock, huh? I mean, even the judge had it in for them. The best he could hope for was a suspended sentence, literally, huh? But really, if you were the judge, you'd be mad too if as soon as you came in, the prisoner made a beeline out of broken window, and it was your glass on the line, huh? You know, but what I can't understand was how the lawyer could act so surprised during the escape. Reagan's intentions were made obvious by his off-the-handcuff remarks, huh? I'll say this much. He was certainly lucky that his backfire didn't backfire, huh? But now it's the real murderer's problem. You could even say that now the ball and chain's in his court, huh? Up next, it's Inner Sanctum Mysteries and Elixir Number 4, So Scary!
Inner Sanctum Mysteries. This is your host of the Inner Sanctum, inviting you in through the creaking door. Come on in and enter into the spirit of things. don't pay any attention to those gurgling sounds you hear. They're the unfortunate ones, the midnight spirits who are caught haunting before midnight. Poor things. All they can do now is gurgle, because they've evaporated. Tonight's story. It's an original radio play written especially for Inner Sanctum by Emil Tepperman.
and starring Richard Widmark in the role of Alex Gregory. Tonight's story. It's about a man who became master of a secret so fearful that it could never be revealed to any mortal, living or dead. But let him tell you the story himself, how he learned the most terrible secret in all the universe, and what he did with it.
It was an evening in September, the 15th to be exact, when I first learned of the existence of Elixir Number 4. It happened at Professor Jarman's house just off the college campus. You've heard of Jarman, of course. He was to chemistry what Einstein is to physics. But it was his daughter, Elaine, that I was interested in that evening in September when I rang their bell.
Oh, hello, Alex. Oh, gosh, is it that late? I'm not even dressed.
Hi, sweet. Snap it up, will you? The last show starts at 8:30.
Well, it won't take me long. Wait for me in the library. I'll be ready in a jiffy.
I knew my way around the house. I went into the library, and the first thing I noticed was that the door to Professor Jarman's private study was ajar. It had never happened before. The private study and the laboratory beyond were forbidden territory in the Jarman home. Not even Elaine was allowed in there. And now the door was open. I'd heard stories of Jarman's experiments with new and secret formulae. So here was a chance, a possible chance to find out what the old codger was working on. I couldn't resist. I pushed open the door and I stepped into the private study. I could hear Jarman in the lab talking to himself. Elaine had told me once that he always talked to himself in the lab. I stood quietly in the study, but I couldn't make out what he was saying in there. I looked around. The study was just a small cubbyhole with a chair, a bookcase, and a desk. And on the desk, I saw the open diary. A single sentence was written on the open page. I stepped closer. And then I got the first shock. For that sentence was written in Latin. My Latin was rusty, but I was able to decipher the words, Vitae secretum in elixir quartum propitis habeo. In elixir number 4, I have the secret of propitis life. Propitis. That was the one word I couldn't seem to place. In elixir number 4, I have the secret of something. Life. I was puzzling over that word propitis when suddenly the laboratory door was flung open.
What are you doing at my desk?
Oh, hello, Professor Jarman.
I asked you, what are you doing at my desk?
Well, the study door was open. I thought I'd see if you were in here.
You were reading my diary.
Oh, no, Professor.
You saw the entry in my diary.
Well, really, Professor, I assure you.
You read Latin.
Latin? Well, I don't understand.
You're sure you don't understand Latin?
No, I don't.
Here I am, Alex. Ready? And, well, is anything wrong?
Elaine, I've told you time and again, no one is to be admitted to my study.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad. You must have left the door open. Oh, Alex, you shouldn't
I'm terribly
have come.
Sorry, Elaine. I found the door open and I thought Professor Jarman was in here. I just wanted to say hello.
All right. No harm done as long as you can't read Latin. I'll get along, you two. I'm busy, but keep out of my study hereafter.
I took Elaine to the movies, but I haven't the faintest recollection of what the picture was about. Through my mind kept running that Latin sentence, Vitae secretum in elixir quartum perpetus habeo. When I said goodnight to Elaine at her door after the show, I hurried home to my room and I got out an old Latin dictionary. I looked up the word perpetus. And then I got a strange, cold feeling down my spine. For the word perpetus meant perpetual. The Latin sentence which Jarman had written in his diary meant, in elixir number 4, I have the secret of perpetual life. Professor Professor Jarman had discovered the secret of immortality. All the next day, I conducted my chemistry classes purely by instinct. I couldn't take my thoughts from elixir number 4. Every voice in the classroom seemed to sing the same refrain.
Accomplished by adding to a dilute solution of H2SO4 a quantity of...
Immortality. Never to know the fear of death. To live on serenely. To watch the world change through the centuries. Never to die. It grew on me like a festering tumor, this terrific dream of immortality, everlasting life. I had to have elixir number 4. In the afternoon, the first free period I had, I went down the hall to Jarman's office.
Come in.
May I come in for a moment, Professor?
Oh, it's you. Yes, come in. I haven't much time.
Professor, I want to apologize for last night.
Let's forget about it. No harm done.
Well, whatever it was you had written in your diary, it must have been pretty important.
Oh, no, no, not at all. Only some chemistry notes. Nothing of any importance. Just something I've been experimenting
with. Well, I'd be very glad to assist you, Professor. Anything I could do,
That's very kind of you, young man, but I don't need any assistance, thank you. As a matter of fact, the experiment is completed.
You mean you're all finished?
All but the practical application.
Oh. Well, couldn't I help you on that?
It won't be necessary. Tonight, I'm taking the last step.
Tonight? I knew what that meant. Tonight, he was going to use elixir number 4. He was going to administer it to himself. I had to act tonight or never. Jarman's keys were on his desk. I distracted his attention and I managed to pick them up without his noticing. Then I hurried across town to a locksmith and had him make duplicates of Jarman's house key, his study key, and his laboratory key. Then I returned to the college and I managed to replace the keys on Jarman's desk while he was out. Now, I was ready for an adventure into immortality. At 8:30 that evening, I let myself into Charman's house, opened the study door, and stepped quietly over to the laboratory. I knew Elaine was at a sorority meeting. The professor and I were the only ones in the house. Jarman was standing at the lab table with his back to me, talking away to himself. There was a small vial on the table and a hypodermic syringe alongside it.
The quantity administered yesterday will be sufficient. At my age, since my blood is too thin, I require the additional dose. But a younger man would need only one injection to cause the necessary type change in his blood. Who's that?
Good evening, Professor Jarman. I hope I'm not interrupting.
What are you doing here? How did you get in?
So elixir number 4 changes the bloodstream, huh?
What do you want in here?
Quit stalling, Professor. I know what elixir number 4 is.
Ah.
So this is it. Elixir number 4.
Careful. Don't spill it.
How much of this stuff have you got?
That's all there is. 5 cc's.
You mean you haven't got any more?
It took me 5 years to distill 10 cc's. Before that, I experimented for 10 years. I failed 3 times.
And this is your 4th try, huh? Elixir number 4. And there isn't any more of it?
It'll take me 5 years more to make up another bat. Please be careful. Don't drop it.
Don't worry, I won't. You said this is enough to make the average man immortal. Me, for instance?
It's not for you. You hear me? Not for you.
Oh, yes, it is, Professor. It's for me.
I won't let you... What are you doing with that mallet?
What do you think?
No.
I'm so sorry, Professor.
Please, I'll let you have it. Don't kill me.
I've got to kill you. When I take this dose of elixir number 4, I'll be immortal. And I don't want anyone to know it.
Away, you fool! You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead 1,000 times. I'll come back to remind you. Back to remind you.
I didn't hit him hard enough to kill him. That wasn't part of my plan. But when he lay unconscious on the floor, I searched among the chemicals until I found what I wanted. I mixed some chemicals in a test tube, and I watched the fumes forming. Then I held the test tube against Jarman's mouth, forcing the deadly gas into his lungs. When I was sure he was dead, I wiped the tube clean of my fingerprints and put it back in the rack. Then I picked up the vial of elixir number 4, the hypodermic syringe, and I hurried away, locking all the doors behind me. As soon as I got home, I filled the hypo with elixir number 4, and I gave myself the injection. Almost immediately, I felt a strange radiance pervading my body. A new strength was flowing in my blood. I was immortal. I couldn't die. I would go on living and living and living forever.
Anxious to see what this fellow Alex does with his secret of perpetual life. Just imagine, a man with all that time on his hands. Time to kill. And kill. And kill.
Immortality. I had it in my blood. I could feel it pulsing in my veins. The vitality, the power. I had to establish an alibi. Not that I expected to need an alibi. Jarman's death would surely look like an accident or suicide when his body was found in the laboratory in the morning. But I wasn't taking any chances on a murder charge. I had so much more to lose now. Wouldn't it be ironic if they were to execute me for murder? Me, an immortal. Next morning, I stopped at Jarman's house and rang the bell. I knew Elaine must have gone right to bed when she returned from the sorority meeting last night, because she never disturbed her father when he was in the lab. But now, when she discovered that he hadn't been to bed all night, she'd want to investigate. And I wanted to be there when the body was found.
Oh, good morning, Alex.
Hello, sweet. What's wrong? You look worried.
Come on in. Alex, I am worried. Dad's still in the lab. He didn't go to bed last night.
Well, what of it? He must be working on something big.
No, I'm afraid something's happened. I knocked at the door just now and there was no answer.
The door was locked?
Yes, but I have a pass key. I wonder if I ought to use it.
Well, of course you should.
Well, please, Alex. You come with me.
Of course, darling. Together we opened the laboratory door. I was all set to act horrified when we discovered the body on the floor. But there was no need to act. I was horrified. For the lab was empty. There was nothing on the floor. The body of Professor Jarman was gone. I don't know for how many hours after that I walked the street, confused and frightened and uncomprehending. I tried to reason it out, how Jarman's body had walked out of that lab. There was only one solution. Jarman had already taken one dose of elixir number 4. It must have counteracted the poison that I'd forced into him. He must have gotten up and then walked away. But where? And why? I recalled what he'd said before I hit him with the mallet. Yes, I could hear his voice faintly strumming at my brain.
You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead 1,000 times. I'll come back to remind you.
The next day, I went to Elaine's house, and I saw that she was taking her father's disappearance pretty hard.
Oh, Alex, I don't know what to make of it. You think that he's...
Now, take it easy, baby. Maybe he's just suffering from amnesia. Maybe he just walked out of the house. He might turn up tomorrow.
I have a terrible feeling, Alex, that he's dead.
What makes you think so?
Oh, I don't know.
Now, please, Elaine, that won't do you any good.
What is the uncertainty? If I only knew for sure. Alex.
Hmm?
Do you believe in mediums?
Communicating with the dead?
Do you believe a medium can put you in touch with the dead?
Oh, is that what you're thinking of, darling? Going to a medium?
Don't you see, Alex? If Dad is dead, maybe... Maybe.
I was worried, too. I had to know if Jarman was dead or alive. I had to know before I could start enjoying life. Yes, that might be a good idea, Elaine. Can't hurt to try. There's a medium in town.
I don't know what I want to do. Let me think about it.
Well, sure, darling. In the days that followed, I began to doubt whether I really was immortal. Was elixir number 4 really the elixir of life? Was I really going to live forever? If there was only some way to prove it. Then I remembered what Jarman had said, that the elixir caused a change of blood type. Well, that'd be easy enough to check. Elaine was taking a medical course, so I asked her to test my blood on the pretext that I thought I had anemia.
It won't hurt, Alex. Just the needle.
Ouch.
There, now I've got all the blood I need. Just sit here a minute while I make the test.
Well, does it take long?
Only a minute. Alex.
She was excited. There was something different about my blood.
Alex. Alex, come here quick.
What?
Look. Oh, look, Alex. I can't be mistaken. Your blood. It's a new type.
Elaine couldn't get over the discovery that my blood was a new type. I'd asked her not to tell anyone about my new blood type, but I knew she wouldn't be able to keep the secret for long. And once it got out, people might begin to suspect what I already knew for sure, that I was immortal. Oh, I couldn't afford to have that known. Because then everybody in the world would be envious of me. They'd hate me, too. Because they'd know I could go on living long after they were dead. Oh, no. No, it had to be a secret forever. No one in the whole world must know. Except myself. And the only person who could spill the secret now was Elaine. So, there was only one thing to do. Elaine furnished the opportunity herself the next day.
Alex, I've been thinking about that medium. I've got to know if Dad is alive or dead.
All right, whatever you say, darling, if it'll make you feel any better. I'll go with you, of course. Just the two of us, huh? We made a date to go to the seance that evening. And I made my plans accordingly. I didn't intend that Elaine should leave the seance alive. We arrived at the medium's house promptly at 9 o'clock. The medium asked Elaine and me to sit close to each other. And then she put out the lights.
Alex.
It's all right, sweet. I'm right here. I'm right next to you.
Oh, I'm frightened.
No, there's nothing to be frightened about, darling. I'm right here with you.
But it's so dark. I can't see anything. I don't hear anything. Where's the medium?
She's still here. She's right across the table. She's gone into a trance.
Do you think she'll contact Dad Spirit?
I don't know, darling. Wait and see. I timed myself carefully, waiting for the moment when the medium should be well into her trance. Then I took out of my pocket the hypodermic syringe. I held the plunger in my left hand while I gripped Elaine's arm with my right, my thumb over the artery.
Alex, my arm, your fingers hurt.
It's all right, sweet. Slowly, I brought the hypodermic needle up close to the artery. One bite of the needle, a single plunge of the plunger, and death would come almost instantaneously. And no one in the world could say that it hadn't been heart failure. But suddenly, just as I had the plunger ready, I heard something strange. A sound. In the room where there should have been no sound.
You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead a thousand times. I'll come back to remind you. Back
the
to remind you. Back
the voice
to
of the
you,
dead.
Back to remind you.
Charmin, where are you? Charmin, stop. You're dead. You're dead, Charmin. You can't be talking. You're dead. I saw your dead body. I killed you myself.
Suddenly, the lights flashed up. The room was full of police.
Arrest him, officer. He killed my father. You heard his confession.
That voice.
That was Dad's voice, Alex. A recording.
What? A recording?
That's why he always talked to himself in the lab. He had a wire recording machine. He talked while he carried on his experiments so that there'd be a permanent record. The wire recorder picked up everything that was said in the lab the night you killed him. But we could never have proved it was your voice in court if you hadn't confessed just now.
Yes, but the body.
I found Dad dead that night when I got back from the meeting. And I hid the body until I could find his murderer. And now, Alex, I found him.
All through the trial, Elaine sat and watched me. All the time the jury was up, she sat and watched me. And she watched me while they read the verdict of guilty. Her eyes never left me when I stood up to be sentenced and heard the judge say,
Alex Gregory, it is the judgment of this court that you be confined to the penitentiary for the rest of your natural life.
Me of all people. Me sentenced to imprisonment for life. Me in whose veins runs the precious elixir number 4. Imprisonment for the rest of my natural life, which means forever.
And so our evening's over, with the usual quota of corpses to qualify for the ghoul school. We're working on a special matriculation for bachelor ghouls. In case you didn't know, a bachelor ghoul is one who believes that two can die as cheaply as one. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is I Hate Blondes by Wolf Kaufman. Good night. Pleasant dreams. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Wasn't that scary, huh? You better believe it. My favorite part was the immortal life elixir. And I'll drink to that any time, huh?
Oh, really?
You could tell Alex was excited about the whole thing. I mean, once he had the keys to the lab, he couldn't wait to unlock life's secrets. Yes, it's just too bad he had to extend his life by ending someone else's. It's just not right. Someone should have hammered that into his brain before he did the professor, that is. But you have to admit, when it came time to divide one dose between two people, he did have a quick solution, huh? Not that it was exactly what the professor had in mind until he buried it there, huh? I guess he just wasn't too sensitive to people with a light palate for the mallet, huh?
Really, though.
Hey, what about the daughter, though, huh? She adored the old man. I even think she was interested in medicine, too. She almost gave the spiritual business a real shot in the arm, huh? I wondered if she wanted to be spoiled like her father as well. By the time she stopped hiding him, he must have been spoiled rotten, huh? Really? And all the while, our hero is behind bars. Considering he only killed one person, it sure seems that he got the maximum for doing the minimum at the mediums, huh? But maybe he won't have to serve a full term. Prison is a dangerous place. With some luck, he could escape by dying sooner than forever, huh? Which brings us to our next feature, Vincent Price in Escape So Scary!
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape into the mind of a man who has been sentenced to die. A man who attempts to refuse the bitter fate society has imposed upon him. As James Poe tells it in his seething tale of violent death, Present Tense, starring Vincent Price.
Away, and the hills beyond, below the stars, are black and sharp. Dead hills, dark sky. Cold steel below my feet, cold as the face of the officer at my side, cold as the cuffs which link my arm to his, which join us on this journey to the prison where I die.
Want a cigarette?
No.
Go on, take one.
No, I don't use them.
Oh.
Has this happened to you before?
What?
Being handcuffed to a murderer. Has it happened to you before?
Sure, plenty of times.
To an axe murderer?
Yeah, there's nothing special, brother. Lots of guys axe their wives, lots of them.
I could have escaped after it happened, but I didn't, and now it's too late. 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 Ever too late. Never too late. Too late. Too late. Escape. Escape. If the train were to be wrecked, if the detective were to be killed... Late. The sweet escape. The light escape. The crash of fate. No! Oh, no! 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 The darkness. Where am I?
The cars must have gone down the gully. No lights and those people in pain. This thing fastened to my wrist went halfway through the glass of the door. Keep back from his blood. I don't seem to be hurt. No broken bones. Escape. Now the key in his pocket, his bloody pocket, and the cuffs are off. His gun and the wallet. His face is gone. His own mother wouldn't know him. I'm free. Fire. Fuel oil. I must get away. Here. My ring onto his finger. There. That completes it.
Bakersfield,
now
arriving. Please claim your luggage
as curved.
I see, mister.
Yes. Where to? Up Beverly Glen, above sunset. I'll show you where.
Gotcha. Read about the big train wreck?
Yes. Understand almost 100 were killed.
Here you are. Keep the change.
Thanks.
My home. It looked so small, so shabby. No one took care of it during the trial. No one cared. No one. No one cares now, but that's good. I like that. I'll be alone, and I won't let the neighbors see me, and I'll sleep and figure out where I go next. The light. Someone's in there.
And? The whole thing went so slick.
You'll always be the brains of those others, won't you? Always.
You bet I will, baby. You bet
I will. No, it can't be. She's dead. I know she's dead.
Want another bottle of beer, honey, huh?
Yeah, sure. It's cold.
You bet it's cold. But I'm not.
You said a mouthful there.
Your husband of mine was never able to make me feel like this.
Takes a man, baby.
All he could do was sit around and write those poems all the time.
Well, you framed it so good that even he thought he killed you.
What was that?
Mice.
Hey, you're funny, you know that? You're real funny.
Open the kitchen door so quietly and walk softly. Here on the wall by the stove, the cleaver.
Hey, Alice, I hear something.
Are you nervous, baby? Yeah. Relax just a little bit.
I see them now. It is she. How did they do it? How did they trick me into imagining the murder? I am innocent.
Love him,
the pig in his dirty undershirt. Soft, weak, white neck, fat on his arms. Pig! Grip the cleaver and walk like a feather. He shall be first. Soft, white neck.
Honest, I hear something.
What's the matter, sweet niece? What's the matter?
And I thought myself guilty, and now I am truly guilty, and never in my life have I felt so innocent. Like a dream, like a nightmare, the confession, the conviction, the sentence, and now... Once more, dark night, cold steel, the sound of wheels, just as I lived it before. Why, even the cold face of the silent officer at my side, hard, cold face, so much like that other face.
Want a cigarette?
No.
Go on, take one.
No, I don't use them.
Oh.
Has this happened to you before?
What?
Being handcuffed to a murderer. Has it happened to you before?
Well, sure, plenty of times.
To an axe murderer?
Yeah, you're nothing special, brother. Lots of guys axe their wives. Lots of them.
But were you ever cuffed to an axe murderer who killed two people at once?
What are you talking about?
My sin, my crime, what I did, I killed them both.
Slam. Now, take it easy, brother. They only kill your wife. Just her. Just one. That's all.
It has been raining for some days now. And beyond the barred window, the leaden sky bleeds sorrow on the barren land. The lonely land, the land beyond the prison wall. The sky was blue when first I came here. Blue, so blue. And now it has become as the walls of my cell, of all our cells. Dark, cheerless cells, these lifeless cells, these cells of men who wait to die. That wet sky, gray sky, cheerless sky. But it is beautiful. I have 12 hours left of life, 12 hours left to live. Beautiful sky, beautiful, beautiful, wet and fresh and alive. Oh, rather would I spend eternity at a well's bottom with but one patch of that to gaze upon than leave this life. Then leave this earth. Then leave this sky. But leave it I must. The guard told me no man has ever escaped San Quentin's death row. Blocks and bars, guards and guns lie between me and the world beyond. No escape, not from here. But wouldn't it be nobler to gamble my life in bold attempt and lay it down in reckless resignation, eh? So, now to get out of this super-guarded area.
Oh! Oh, God! God!
Hey, hey, pipe down, cut it out.
What's wrong? What's the matter with you?
My gut! Here! It's killing me!
Your gut, huh? Well, I'll call a medic.
Oh. Now, as I press you, tell me where it hurt.
Everywhere. Oh, all over down here. There! Oh, don't touch that place again!
Call the ambulance.
Right.
This man's got appendicitis.
Well, what do I do? Why didn't they send somebody with you?
The interns are all tied up. They're giving shots today.
Well, he's acting kind of crazy. Let's get him over to the hospital block. Now, hurry.
I can't drive any faster. My windshield steamed up.
So wipe it.
You got a rag?
Yeah, here. You could use my handkerchief.
Okay, pal. Give him the handkerchief.
Oh, my God!
What the?
Keep right on driving through the gate, or the top of your head comes off.
You won't get away with this?
I will. I'm betting my life that I will.
How far back is the prison?
About 15 miles. At least that.
Okay, pull over. I'm taking her from here. And you two. I want your money, your clothes. Then you can walk back and explain about me.
Explain about him?
They won't find the ambulance for days. Not at the bottom of that canyon. Now I cross the border on foot and into Mexico.
Your drink, senor.
Oh, thank you. When does the next bus leave for Mexico City?
At 12 o'clock, senor.
A little card bought in a back room with no questions asked, and I become a tourist. 4 days' growth of beard, and I become poor. An empty suitcase with a butterfly net strapped to its outside, and I become a source of amusement. A funny, dumb gringo. And who looks with suspicion on the funny, dumb gringo tourist who is poor? Mexico City is beautiful, but not when you are hungry. Not when you are an American who is hungry. Americans aren't supposed to be hungry. What can I do? All I know is writing, the writing of poetry. There is one place I might sell some poems. Pollen. His magazine prints some English stuff. Perhaps... Well, why not? I have 3 pesos left. Buy some paper, a pencil, sit in the park, write, and storm the bastion.
Huh? Yeah? Hmm. Yeah, that is good here.
Do you like them, Mr. Pollen?
Well, excuse me. Lucida.
See,
I have some poems here.
Oh, let me see.
the river doubled, dreaming troubled, faster passion of my soul. Ah, muy bueno.
Yeah, that is just what I thought.
You are too kind.
The poet should read his own work.
that drips sweet droplets, passion's goblets, fate thy role.
Lucita likes your stuff.
A rare woman.
And I like what Lucita likes.
Aha.
She says we do a book of your stuff.
Oh?
So here's an advance.
Too much.
Take it.
When the book?
That it is.
Right.
Got the poem?
I'll get them.
Your name is?
Miss.
No good to dull.
So true.
I'll make a new one.
Please do.
And so?
Good day, and I'll be back.
30 days.
With the poem. America. Miles below. Bleak brown mountains, the desert yellow and red. My own, my native land. My advance money went for a new clothing and a round-trip plane ticket to Los Angeles and my new lease on life. In a small file under the eaves of the little house in Beverly Glen, there are poems, more than 1,000 of them, poems which no one has ever seen, poems written in the evenings after work on Sundays. Now, with the beard and the hat and the glasses, no one will recognize me. A cane. I ought to carry a cane, too. Get the poem. Does someone live there in the house? Has someone bought it? No matter. Get the poems and then get back to Mexico City. Someone is living here. I wonder who. The hedge is trimmed. And my hammock. Someone's put on a new canvas cover.
Fred, get the door.
When you get it yourself, baby, I'm shaving.
Oh, all right. Yeah?
Oh, no, it can't be.
Well, what do you want?
Her face, it's Mary, but I thought I killed her.
Who is it, baby?
Well, what is it, mister? What do you want here?
Are you the lady at the house?
Who's that at the door?
Some creep. With a beard. Yeah, I'm the lady of the house, but I don't want to buy anything.
Well, what is it, Santa Claus? What do you want?
Are you the man of the house?
Yeah, I'm the man of the house. And sweet meat.
I'll say.
So what of it?
I'm making a survey. I'd like to ask a few questions. May I come in?
Well, I don't know.
Let him. What's the difference?
Thank you. First, your name.
Name?
Yes, please.
Fred Sneed.
Hey, where's he going? Mister, what do you want in my kitchen?
The cleaver, Mary. Don't you know me?
Mary. Hey, who are you, mister?
Look close, Mary.
The cleaver. Put it down.
Know me? Know the man you tricked into San Quentin?
Oh, no, don't. Put down that...
You killed him!
Yes, Mary.
Yes.
No!
Confession, conviction, sentence, transportation, and... Oh, again, the death cell as before. But when I came here, they promised I could keep the beard. They promised I could keep the beard. And it's gone. Gone. I can't remember when.
Ray?
Ready.
It's time to go, my son.
Time to go.
You've refused my help up to now. But perhaps you'd like to walk with me.
Rather beside you, Padre, than beside one of these mercenaries. My legs, the muscles quiver, not with fear, no, but with the desire to feel themselves moving, straining, acting... While yet there is time, I'm not afraid. But this body, I hate the thought of its being killed by these men. My beautiful body, soon it will be dead, cold, rotting, dead. It will rot. No, they must not do this to me.
You must be brave, my son.
My body. Years I spent with the great corporeal master, the yogi, learning my bodily purpose, my bodily care, the use of willpower to control my body. The yogi...
My teacher, yes. I shall use yoga. Suspend my breathing and become invulnerable to their gas. Suspend my body functions to the point of death and fool their doctor, of course. Oh, yes, the greatest escape of them all, and this time I must succeed.
All right, here we are.
The room is so small. Somehow I had imagined it would be larger. And here is the chair. Yes, straps. Hood.
All right, now just sit down.
And over there, the glass.
Take it easy.
Small pane with the dark faces seen dimly through. The witnesses.
Lay your arms along these.
The whole room is like some strange sort of time machine. Yeah. Machine for launching a man into another dimension. So true.
Yeah.
I'd best begin to prepare myself.
Relax.
Relax. Must relax. It won't be easy.
Have you any last words, my son?
Yes, one request. Do not allow my poor body to be dissected or embalmed, but on the third day after my death, cremate it.
That will be arranged as you desire.
Thank you.
God be with you, my son. Remember what Christ said to the two criminals. In this day shalt thou be with me in heaven.
Now move your head forward a little while I put the hood down. There. Now when you hear the pellets drop into the air, so don't try any tricks. Just breathe deeply, see? Fumes don't hurt, see? You just cooperate with us. Make it easy on yourself, pal. You know what I mean?
Doctor, you can go on in.
Well, let's see now. Respiration ceased. Heart stopped. By the authority vested in me by the state of California, I pronounce this man dead.
I will myself to consciousness in 6 hours' time.
Dark here and cold, so cold. I must get up and see. Oh, the prison morgue. It worked. But I'm cold, so cold. What's this on my toe? A tag. Too dark to read it, but I know what it says. It has my name, prison number, time of execution, yes. And now to look around, because the next must be played just right. And this should be it. A coffin crate ready for shipping. Some cadaver being returned to a sentimental family. Well, that ought to be just right. And with him on my slab, my tag on his toe, and the most perfect escape of all time underway. Here we go. I will my body to return from its state of suspended animation and to come immediately out of trance when next this coffin shall be opened. Hello, old man. Funeral parlor. Poor fellow. Must have a bad heart. Let's see. No, it's going. Well, let's hope he's out for a while. This must be the workroom. Light hanging over the work table and there, a locker. Ah, with a suit. Fine. And here in the desk, might there not be some sort of... Yes, here. A petty cash box. And it's quite full. The old boy apparently doesn't believe in banks. And now that Lazarus has returned from the dead, this newspaper, Dateline, I was executed 4 days ago. Now I find myself resurrected in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Los Angeles, California. This is Los Angeles. You can claim your baggage in the station or on the platform.
I've returned to my home. Beautiful time to return home. My old hammock is there and my flowers, my yard. The house is empty. The lawyer said he had it cleaned up. My books, my pictures. Here's my old pipe. I haven't smoked it in years. Mary didn't like it. But now she's gone. I don't hate her anymore. Tobacco's still fairly fresh. Still the pipe. There's that detective story I never got to finish. Now I'll have time. Now I'll have lots of time. Time to smoke and read and write and rest. Sun's almost down. Twilight. Wonderful time to get outside. Cool, sweet air. Wonder what kind of birds those are. My hammock. Oh, it's so nice. Light the pipe. And, relax. Wish I could remember what page I was on, but no matter. I can begin again. I've got all the time in the world. The rest of my life. Birds. The sun is slipping out of sight. Death of the sun. I read the sky. How soft those clouds. So lovely, so lovely. What's that? Birds playing in the fish pond. Look at them. Happy birds. That hissing. The neighbor is turning on his lawn sprinkling system. Lie here and smell the cool air. Evening coming on. Sky grows darker. Lie in the gathering twilight. Death of the day, birth of the night. Sweet softness of the summer night coming. Soon the stars. Oh, it's lovely, heavenly. Just like heaven. Lie.
By the authority vested in me by the state of California, I pronounce this man dead.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Tonight we have presented Present Tense by James Poe, starring Vincent Price as Roger. Featured in the cast were Charles McGraw as Fred Sneed, Joan Banks as Mary, Harry Bartell as the Doctor, and Ben Wright as Pollen. Also heard were Tom Tully, William Lally, Jeff Corey, and Paul Fries. Special music was arranged and conducted by Del Castillo. Goodbye, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape.
Huge! That was too scary, wasn't it, huh? Vincent Price! Now I know why they call it present tense. Everyone present is tense, huh? Oh, I know I am, really. I mean, I've heard the couple splitting up, but with an axe? Come on! Oh, but I guess it's one way to bury the hatchet. In the offending party, huh? Really? And that was just the first time. Later he had to start using knives and cleavers. I suppose overusing the axe can become dull. Then again, maybe he just wanted to make sure she got the point, huh? That or else he wanted to relish a slice of wife. I mean life. There seems to have been a certain amount of irony in it all, though. Hey, she cut up behind his back, so he cut up in front of hers. You know, though, and for his murders, his punishment was equally, should I say it, ghastly? Yes. Well, kids, I better fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is a count warning the women folk out there. If you're looking for a husband, don't get them too sharp, or else they may stainless steel a kiss of death, huh?
Returns control of your radio device to you until next week.
No.